It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 5155 on Ray at RTE.ie. I should have asked Tommy if he's anything to Paul. Paul's on the cover of the Daily Mail today. Paul Mescal. And he's wearing a powder blue double-breasted oversized blazer, high-waisted black trousers with a kick, more than a kick, flares. But the most controversial aspect of his outfit is a very low-cut white vest, which is getting people talking. I don't know if men can have a décolletage. Is that how you pronounce it? Décolletage, is that the French word for a woman's, that area of a woman's body, just below the neck and above the chest area, and women show it off when they have a low-cut dress. They say simply the vest, Paul's edgy sense of style on show in California. He doesn't have a hairy chest. I wouldn't get away with that now because I've a hairy chest, so there'd be grey hairs emanating from the low-cut vest. It's just not a look I could pull off, but in fairness to Paul Mescal, he can pull off that look. It's Gucci, we're told. Oversized, powder blue, double-breasted blazer. Looking good, looking good. While we're on fashion, I see that the quarter zipper becomes the new status symbol for men of a certain position. Now you're talking my mind. There you go. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a quarter zipper going up and down. Now, Rishi Sunak seemingly wears them. David Beckham was spotted in one as well. There are two types, just for those of you who don't know, there are two types of quarter zipper. There's one with the collar that sticks out. It's sort of a stiff collar. It sticks out, and men of a certain age and a certain sort of position wear them with shorts. That's not the type of one I wear, just to get this clear. Mine is more a sporty type thing, but it is a quarter zipper. Seemingly, that's the thing. You don't wear crew necks anymore or V-necks. You wear your quarter zipper. And John Lewis, which is an unofficial barometer of British fashion, and we follow suit because we've a lot of their shops in our high streets, say it has sold 62% more quarter zips than crew necks since the start of the year. Among customers, favourites is a £55 navy cotton version with a silver zip. So there, you're nobody unless you have a quarter zipper and a powder blue oversized double-breasted blazer. Well done to Petrina and Alma, the Tubbercurry sisters who've taken Tokyo by storm. We spoke to them about 2 weeks ago. They were on their way to Japan to take part in the Tokyo Marathon. And it was part of the World Major Marathon Challenge, where the girls, the sisters, were going to become the first sister pairing to complete the challenge. And the challenge is six marathons in six different cities across the world. Boston, London, Berlin, Chicago, New York, Tokyo. Everybody talk about pop music. And Petrina and Alma there, lovely picture, and they sent it to us. And they were all invited along to the Irish Embassy in Tokyo afterwards. And I'm sure that picture will make the local Tubbercurry Chronicle. It's a great picture, and they're smiling. And Petrina, who's the runner of the two, both of them are runners, obviously, got a PB. So well done to you both. Well done. You know me and the royal family and the monarchy and all the hoo-ha that goes around it. Well, listen to this. The oil used to anoint the king, as in King Charles, in the upcoming coronation is one of the most sacred and mysterious parts of the ceremony. And a new quantity has been prepared, but reflecting modern animal-friendly sensitivities, the oil will not include any ingredients from animals. The chrism oil, CHRISM, for the coronation was consecrated in a religious ceremony in Jerusalem on Friday. This was carried out in one of the city's holiest Christian sites, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Previous versions have included sifalt, or even sifalt oil, from the glands of the small mammals, and then ambergris from the intestines of whales. And there have been concerns about animal cruelty, so they're gone animal-friendly this time, with an anointing oil. Oh, God. The anointing of the king has echoes of a christening, they say in this article, or the ordination into religious orders, with the monarch being symbolically touched with holy oil on the head, chest and hands. And this was considered such a sacred moment that the television cameras were not allowed to film it back in 1953. And there's been speculation about whether the anointing will be shown on TV during King Charles' coronation on the 6th of May. The new oil includes olive oil scented with a mix of essential oils, sesame, rose, jasmine, cinnamon, neroli, benzoin, with orange blossom also added. So there you go. I don't know what you think of all that hoo-ha and ceremony. It seems completely outdated to me, but there you go. More important things, what do people put in their chips? Curry sauce beats gravy for the first time. Big news on this Monday afternoon. So the top 10, I won't go, top 5. Gravy, mayonnaise. At number 3 is curry sauce there, in with a bang or in with a tang. And at number 2, vinegar. And still at number 1 is ketchup. So there's what people have on there. I never got the chips and gravy thing. It's not right. It's like at home when Jenny puts butter on her roast potatoes. That's not right either. You put gravy on roast potatoes, you put vinegar on chips, just leave well enough alone. Leave well enough alone. But that's, look, who might say? Well, we're on food. Gruyere cheese, right? And you know the way in Europe, you have your blas and your champagne and your various things, and they have special rulings that means that only products from a particular location can call themselves a particular thing. So only fizzy wine from the Champagne region can call themselves champagne. Other things have to call them fizzy wines or Prosecco, whatever. Likewise, that BAP, that flowery BAP, BAP from Waterford can be called a blah only if it's produced in Waterford. Can't be called a blah anywhere else. Anyway, in America, they're not so fussy about things. So US made cheese can also be called Gruyere. The name Gruyere can now be used to label cheeses from outside the Gruyere region of Switzerland and France. A US appeals court has ruled. And I'm sure you could make a flowery BAP over there and call it a blah, and you could make fizzy wine and call it champagne. I don't know, but they're a lot more lax with their laws around that sort of thing in America than we are here in Europe. But it reminded us of the late, great Larry Gogan, and he was doing a voiceover for an ad. He did a lot of those for cheese. And it's him and Chris Curran and Gruyere, whatever, however you pronounce it, comes up. So let's have a listen to the late Larry and Chris in a booth somewhere.
Three Counties. That's a funny name for a cheese.
Yeah.
I wonder which Three Counties.
Cork, Kerry and Limerick.
Is that so? Where? Hey, look what they've got on it. Gruyere cheese.
That's the one with all the holes in it.
Start again.
Right.
Because I had to go and
get that man a glass of water.
I better not look anywhere near you then.
Where? Start now.
Take 2. Three Counties. That's a funny name for a cheese.
Yeah.
You have the giggles?
I'm sorry, I'll start again. Terrible. When I get the giggles, I can't stop. We'll start again. Take 3, is it?
Yeah.
Take 3.
Good.
Three Counties. That's a funny name for a cheese.
Yeah.
I wonder which Three Counties.
Cork, Kerry and Limerick.
Is that so? Hey, look what they've got on it. Gruyere cheese.
That's the one with all the holes in it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Jesus, I don't think they ever got it done. They never got it done. That's great. The late Larry Gogan there and Chris Curran. We decided because when we come in on a Monday, we talk about what we watch over the weekend. And I know people do lists before the weekend. But what about a list after the weekend? People can recommend the things that they've watched over the weekend. You can watch them wherever you like. So let's go through the team then. Emily P watched Pamela, A Love Story, which has been out a few weeks. She liked it. She says she's surprisingly sweet and down to earth. She gave it 4 stars. It's only 1 hour 52 minutes, so you don't have to commit too much time to it. For nostalgia reasons alone, it's 4 stars. Emily H, she watched A Man Called Otto. It's a film available on Amazon and stars Tom Hanks. It's a remake of a Swedish movie which was based on a book. Tom Hanks plays a grumpy widower whose life changes when a new family move in across the street. Funny but a tearjerker. 4 stars from Emily H. Neve went to the movies over the weekend. Look at you, fancy. Marcel the Shell with Shoes on general release in cinemas. It's an animation with live action. It's a heartwarming tale of a tiny shell with pink shoes who looks after his grandmother after his community disappears. Niamh says she cried for 45 minutes. It's affirming and funny. A tearjerker. 5 stars from our Niamh. Neil watched Empire of Light on Disney Plus, starring Olivia Colman as the manager of a seaside cinema in England in the 1980s. It also has Colin Firth, directed by Sam Mendes. And in it, Olivia Colman falls for a younger colleague, romantic and sad. 4 stars from Neil. Gilly watched 4 Good Days with Mila Kunis and Glenn Close. In it, Mila Kunis's character is battling substance abuse. Not a Saturday night feel-good film, says our Gilly, but makes you rethink what a good day really means. 4 stars from her. And Grace didn't get to watch anything of her own accord. The telly was switched to Liverpool's thrashing of Manchester United, but her fellow was happy because he's a Liverpool fan, so she's given it 7 out of a possible 5. 1 for each goal. Ba-dum-tsh. So there. What did I watch over the weekend? Yeah, Living with Bill Nighy. I have to look up the pronunciation of the name. Bill Nighy. He plays an ageing civil servant who's diagnosed with terminal cancer and realises that he hasn't lived, thus the name Living. Great performance for him. He's nominated for an Oscar, but the movie itself is just lacking something. 3 stars. It's available on Apple. We watched Nope as well. Sci-fi alien type thing. It's gripping. It's witty. Brilliantly understated special effects. 4.5 stars. Available on Apple. So there, we'll see if we do that every Monday. It's a nice little thing. We'll put them up on our website as well. Now, 51551radio.rt.ie. It's true what they say about fashion. It's a case of in 1 year, out the other, says Reg. Yes, and if you hold on to things long enough, Reg, they'll come back into fashion. My son Tony Steele and his mate also did the Tokyo Marathon at the weekend and has achieved all the other world marathons. I'm very proud of him, from his mother Madge. Well done, Tony, and your mate. You're not telling us what exactly this quarter zipper is. Is it a jacket, a jumper, an overcoat, a sweater, a tracksuit? It's a jumper. It's a jumper, but it has a sort of a turtleneck stroke polo neck and then has the zip down quarter way down to the top of Paul Mescal's vest. That's where it goes as far as. I'm in the kitchen laughing. I miss Larry on the radio. What an icon. Beautiful voice. Beautiful radio voice, yes. That's Maria Burke in West Cork. Warm regards. And things to do, not to do. Ask your Man United friend, would you like a 7-Up? Oh, no. The penultimate episode of Smother on RT had a vicious ending. There you go. Penultimate. There's the word, isn't it? It's a word loved by broadcasters. Penultimate. I know what it means. So there you go. It's second last. But I'm not going to say second last. I'm going to say penultimate. 51551radio.rt.ie. Good afternoon. Future Island Seasons on RT Radio 1. Great song. Been waiting for you. 51551radio.rt.ie. Sepulchre is how it's pronounced. Thank you very much. There's a good few pronunciations there today. Probably shouldn't have attempted them all on a Monday afternoon. I watched the film Founder. It's all about how McDonald's was founded. Very good, says John. Yes, Michael Keaton is sort of the baddie in it because, he buys them out in the end, doesn't he? It's a very good movie, actually. Great movie. Simon here in Wicklow. Those quarter-neck tops, it's quarter-zip tops, have been around forever. Well, in the trekking world, it's so you can zip them down to let excess heat escape. Nothing new, Ray. But you know fashion. Simon, you know fashion. In today, not in tomorrow, back next week, 6 years' time, century time. That's the way it works. Now, we're looking for 2 people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, so 2 quizzers, 3 Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, films, politics, comedy, TV, anything that involves human endeavour. Like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2 for a correct answer. And with the clue, you get 1 for a correct answer, because it's easier. And there is a prize. Yes, we're giving away 2 nights stay with breakfast each morning and dinner in 1 evening at the River Lee, part of the family-run Irish luxury hotel group, the Doyle Collection. Spring is in the air, and it's time to discover all Cork has to offer with the River Lee's dinner-inclusive stays for a limited time only. Use the promo code CHAMPAGNE when booking directly on their website to enjoy a complimentary bottle of champagne to toast your arrival. Beautiful riverside location, luxurious bedrooms and dining and drinks option to suit every taste. A getaway to Cork has never looked better with the River Lee. And you can find out more at doylecollection.com. Doylecollection.com. Okay, here's your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. Who departed Dancing with the Stars last night? Who left Dancing with the Stars last night? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. Who left Dancing with the Stars? Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yep, 5155 on ray@rte.ie. And the number for the quiz is 0818 715925. Sometimes I say it too quickly. 0818 715925. Great prize of a break for two people in one of the Doyle Collection hotels, the River Lee in Cork. 0818 715925. Now, a hammering, a humiliation, an embarrassment. Some of the words used in the papers to describe Man United's defeat by Liverpool. 7-0 was the final score. Stephanie Roach is on the line, footballer for the Irish Women's National Team and Piemont United, TV commentator, analyst and Man United supporter. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
No, more importantly, how are you?
Not so good. Honestly, when I got the call to ask to come on, I was tempted to say no. It's a difficult one to talk about.
Yeah, because like it's you have to go back to when Man United were called Newton Heath.
Yeah.
That's the last time they were beaten by...
By so many.
Yeah, 129 years.
Yeah.
And then.
No, it's a tough day for United fans. I think just... the way things have been going lately, it's been going a lot better. And then, obviously, to go against anybody but Liverpool and lose by that many, it was just it was tough to take.
Yeah, so just for people who are listening who don't follow football, they have a new manager, Ten Hag. Isn't that it? They were hopeful about him. I was just reading some of the previews.
In fairness, he's turned things around a little bit for them. Like, it's been going a lot better than it had been going until yesterday.
Yeah. Are Liverpool still Man United's nemesis?
Yeah, I think so. I think the rivalry between Man United and Liverpool is probably the biggest in the Premier League. You know, it's probably one of the biggest in world football, really. So it's a tough one for United fans to take for the team to go and just not show up in that second half. And obviously all the words he just used a second ago there, I think most United fans can relate to that and would have felt that way yesterday after the game.
Yeah, and it was body blow after body blow. So like Manchester United, as reading the reviews of it, the analysis of it, they played quite well for the first half, and then on the 43rd minute, it was Gakpo.
And still Cody Gakpo, goal! It's absolutely brilliant from the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah, so then just after half-time, Nunes.
And this is going to come for Salah. I'm sure only half away. Goal! It's another for Liverpool.
And then just 3 minutes later, he's back.
All right, now come on, will you stop?
Incredible goal.
No, but just for people who didn't see
incredible
the match.
Incredible scenes at Anfield.
We get the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was quite a few goals.
seven goals. No, I don't want to. What I'm interested in, and it because you play at the highest level, you're a pundit, but yet you're a fan, right? And
yeah.
I've often had this discussion with mates. Why would you do it to yourself? Why would you invite that disappointment into your life every weekend, or the possibility of that disappointment into your life every weekend? Can you answer that question?
I can't, to be honest. I think it's the hope that you don't have the disappointment. It's the hope of going to Anfield and beating Liverpool and having that kind of exhilaration after the game. I think if you're a football fan, you love the highs and lows of the game, but obviously you prefer to have the highs more so than the lows. And in fairness, as I said, United have been playing a lot better. Things have been going a lot better, but there's still cracks obviously there. And I think they were properly humbled yesterday and kind of brought back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah, it was a day of records. Unfortunately, the bad ones are for Manchester United and the good ones are for Liverpool. Mo Salah now becomes the greatest scorer in the history of Liverpool in the modern game anyway. So when the match is over, did you watch it till the end? Or did you watch all seven goals?
I did, yeah. I probably was one of the only ones. My husband left the room at half time, believe it or not. So at 1-0, he'd left the room.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a little bit of a... the household wasn't very happy over the weekend, let's just say. It's amazing how much it can affect you, I suppose, affect your mood. People who don't like football probably think we're mad, but it's just the way it is. I think if you follow the teams like we do, and football fans do, and even other sports, people will understand. It means a lot, you know, and obviously to go down there by that much to your biggest rivals was difficult to take. But like, I like to watch it and kind of hear what they say at the end and hear the likes of Roy Keane and Gary Neville speak and that. But yeah, what did they say? I think like they obviously said it wasn't good enough. I think it was funny because Gary Neville and Graham Souness were having it back and forth quite a bit, obviously saying how it was a freak result. But in fairness, Graeme Souness, I don't normally agree with him, but he said it's been coming, and there has been games where United have been quite lucky not to kind of concede a few goals. I think kind of obviously to concede 7, you maybe didn't see that coming, but there has been signs of kind of something coming in the last few months. So it's unfortunate it came against Liverpool.
And you know, it's joyous when there's a win and everyone's shouting and hugging and jumping up off the sofa. And then when there's a defeat, there's that old saying, misery loves company. So do you get a sense that obviously Liverpool or Manchester United supporters all over the world are sort of grieving or upset or low or... So do you get a sense of that you're all in it together?
A little bit, yeah. I think it's about supporting a club, isn't it? I think obviously United have had the highest of highs over the last kind of 20 years or so, you know, but the last recent times haven't been so good, you know, winning the Carabao Cup. For me, as a United fan, probably wouldn't have been that big of a deal a couple of years ago, but because there's been no success in the club for a while now, it's been celebrated very highly and people are saying United are back, and you get a few fans kind of getting on the hype train again. But I think, as I said yesterday, brings us back down to
it's
earth
a
with a bang.
Call.
It shows
yeah.
that
yeah.
there's still a lot that needs to be done, you know, and I just think it's as a football fan, it's how the game goes.
How do you recover from that as a player? Because it's humiliating, isn't it? Like, it is humiliating, yeah.
I think they have to take it on the chin as well. I think they have to look back at it and watch themselves, because I think for fans, you don't mind being outclassed by a team and you know, watching a very, very good team. And Liverpool were very good at times yesterday, but I think for most fans, it was how badly some of the players reacted. You know, there was no characters on the team. Bruno Fernandes, who's the captain of the team, was still more whining and moaning on the pitch than trying to fix the issues that were happening, you know, and that's kind of hard for fans to take. You know, you want to see players giving their all to try and at least come away from the game with a little bit of pride, and I think that's what you didn't see, and that's what fans kind of are disappointed in, I suppose.
Yeah.
Look at yourself and go from there, yeah.
It can go two ways then, like, because it's a real knock to their confidence and to the manager's confidence as well, I would say.
Yeah.
Or it can be seen as something that will spur them on.
Yeah, well, I think they have to look at it that way. I think, as we said, things have been better the last few months. I think there's still a lot to be improved on. There's a lot of players that still have a lot to prove. And I think they just need to look at themselves and really... There's no time, obviously, in football. United have been playing games nearly every 3 days for the last few weeks. So they're playing on Thursday night now in the Europa League. So it's a chance to kind of put things right, I suppose.
Yeah, somebody said that in the analysis today, that they looked a bit tired.
It's an excuse that people are saying. And obviously, playing at the highest level, I think that's been a talking point in football now for a while, in terms of players playing so many games with international football and club football. But at the same time, like, I think you just have to, as a footballer, kind of grin and bear and get on with it. You know, you could see certain players, it was definitely showing on them, but other players have said you can't give up in a game against Liverpool.
And now the slagging starts, doesn't it? You know, already we got that in. You know, you offer a Manchester United a 7-up. Don't offer a Manchester
United. Yeah, I know. I've been getting DMs now the last 24 hours since the match. Yeah, what's even kids in my after school program are giving me stickers. You know, I'm a Liverpool or United fan.
Can you share any of the funniest ones with us, or the least funny in your world?
Well, in fairness, I probably bring them on myself, because whenever kids come to where I can't or our episodes with a Liverpool jersey on, I look at them and I give them something to cover it up with, you know.
Yeah.
So they all know I'm a United fan.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, what score was the game yesterday? So it's funny. You have to take on the genesis.
Okay, right. Well, you're a great sport. Thanks for coming on, even though you had second thoughts about it. Yeah, great to talk to you, Stephanie. Mind yourself.
No problem,
say
right.
bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
How was your weekend? Did anything happen that might have annoyed you? Has something been playing on your mind for the last while? Be it changes in your life or a conversation with a friend? Well, psychotherapist and mindfulness teacher Padraig, or even Padraig O'Moran, joins me in studio to talk about his new book, Acceptance, Create Change and Move On. Good afternoon, Padraig.
Hello, Ray.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I read the book from start to finish, and I think it might change my life.
That sounds good. At least I hope that's a good thing.
It's sort of common sense, isn't it, acceptance?
Yeah, it is very much so. There's a lot that we need to accept in life, you know, and if you... To not accept things, anything that you don't like at all, is putting you on a road to conflict with yourself, with everybody else, with the world, with the whole lot. There are such people, but I think they spend a lot of their time stressed out.
Yes.
You know, stressed out. And so acceptance kind of clears the way, if you like. It's not that you have to put up a walk all over me sign, but you're saying, well, I can accept, I didn't like that, but I accept that it happened. Now what comes next? Right. And what comes next might be to deal with the thing that happened, or it might be to go and have a coffee, or it might be to go and, you know, have a laugh about something else.
Okay, and acceptance happens in our heads, and it sort of stops a lot of the voices that are nagging us, upsetting us, shouting at us, causing us worry, causing us anxiety.
So it's a choice,
It's a choice
that we make in our head, because non-acceptance, if you think non-acceptance is, well, you're giving out to imaginary people, you're rerunning the scenes and all this. And what thoughts are physical. So when you're having those kinds of thoughts, your body is pumping out the adrenaline and the cortisol and all the stress things, and your heart is beating faster, and there's a lot of different things happening. You're stressing yourself out physically as well as mentally. And so with acceptance, you've decided, okay, this happened. There isn't anything I can do about it, or maybe it isn't even worth the trouble. I'm now going to stop all of that and move on with my day.
Right, and that's where the title of the book comes from: Create Change and Move Forward. And you've used that phrase already. What's next? And that's recurs in the book a lot.
That is the theme. That's the basic theme of the book, because it's an aspect of human beings that we're moving to what's next always. And I give an example of where you might have somebody who's climbing a mountain, and they always have to be focused not only in the present moment, but what's next, because if they put a foot wrong, that's not good.
Yes.
You might have another, maybe you've got a fellow who's sitting on a sofa at home, and he's eating a big bag of crisps, and he's drinking Coke, and he's watching television, and he's not doing a lot. But then, even with him, when the program is over, it's what's next, he's going to start flicking around. He's going to go and get another bag of crisps or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So no matter what you're doing,
can I recommend Nope? It's a good, I watched it over the weekend for him. Nope, it's a good film. Okay. I recommend that when you meet him.
For that particular
man. Yeah,
okay.
So you run workshops in mindfulness, and peppered through the book are things that people have said to you.
And
all around acceptance. So,
yes.
And in the chapters, you deal with various things. So we go through those.
I suppose
anxiety is a word that we're hearing more and more of. And you are in this business, if you like, for how many years?
Oh, well, I started my training in counselling during the early 1980s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So 40 years.
Yeah.
40 years, yes.
Yeah.
And you were into mindfulness before it was fashionable.
Yes, I was, actually. I discovered it one day in the very late 1980s. I worked for the Irish Times. I still do a column for them, but I was on the payroll at the time. And I used to leave my desk every now and then, sometimes leaving a jacket in the back of the chair, the old trick, and go wandering around bookshops, as it happens. And Eason's was a favourite haunt. And I noticed a book there one day about mindfulness and meditation. And there weren't many books about that at all in the bookshops at the time. So I began to read it, and I opened it at the pages describing mindfulness, describing it as bare attention, where you're just paying attention to what you're doing and what's going on without adding anything in. So I started doing it there and then, and I liked it, and I bought the book, and I went back to work, and then I decided to practice some more mindfulness. I went out to Trinity College, and there was a cricket match going on, and I stood at the pavilion bar. I bought a pint of lager, and I mindfully watched the cricket and drank the pint, and it was fantastic.
And how did that differ from the way you used to do it?
Ordinarily, in the past, I would probably be going over problems in my mind much more much more intensely.
Okay.
If there was something that annoyed me, I'd probably be going over that and reliving it. And I'd be going through a lot of the maybe workplace dramas in my head, because every workplace has dramas, and they're kind of all the same dramas if you analyse them. But anyway, and I, if there was something I was aggrieved about, I might be going over and over that. So instead, I learned to move my awareness onto what was going on around me.
In the now.
Even though the cricket match to me was incomprehensible and still is today, but it's what was there, you know, yeah. And it was kind of fitted in with this romantic evening idea of the cricket match and the field and the sun and the whole thing. But it might only be something very, very ordinary indeed. You might be standing on the side of the road waiting for the bus to come.
Yeah.
And sometimes switching your attention to that rather dull and boring scene is better than where you might be in your head, depending.
Like, I've read one of the books mentioned in your book by Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yes.
Who was a Buddhist monk.
Yes.
And he wrote, is it The Art of Mindfulness or the
He wrote.
What was it? It's a skinny book.
There's The Art of Mindful Walking, The Art of Mindfulness, The Art of. He's broken it into various.
Yes,
ones. He has a lot of books.
This one was where he just describes, for example, doing the washing up.
Yeah.
And how you just do the washing up.
Yeah. That's
Don't think about anything else. Just think about the water and your hands and the dishes or the cups and how you're cleaning them. Yeah. And it's
anything like that you're doing, which involves some kind of physical activity.
Yeah.
If you can move your awareness to that, it takes you out of all of that rumination, which is rerunning negative thoughts over
in
and
your
over
head.
Through your head. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
is that not being human, though?
Yes, it is being human.
Yeah.
But like a lot of things that are human, it's a matter of not overdoing it.
Okay. Well, we started there with anxiety and we went off on a cricket trip there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's get back to anxiety then, because a lot of people suffer from it or claim to suffer from it, and it's a buzzword around at the moment. So where does acceptance come in to anxiety?
It would come into, let us say, if you're thinking that, if you're anxious about, I have an interview for a promotion tomorrow and I'm very anxious about it and I'm going over and over it. Acceptance is saying, you're going to have the interview, you've done your preparation, now go and wash the dishes or have a walk or whatever.
Mm.
And of course the thing, because that's a high anxiety thing, it'll keep coming back in. But each time it does, you can just move your attention gently to something else. This is assuming you've done your planning, of course.
Yes, of course, of course. Yeah. Like it's not a solve-all thing, acceptance. And breathing. I've been doing this since I started reading the book.
Yeah.
I've been doing the 7-11.
Yes.
So you breathe in for 7 seconds and exhale for 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're basically counting to 7 while you're breathing in. You're counting to 11 while you're breathing out. You can change the numbers if they're too hard for you. But the key thing is, you're taking a longer out-breath than in-breath because the out-breath is connected with and switches on the soothing, calming part of the nervous system. And also you find yourself breathing more slowly. And slow breathing is really a great way to come into calm. Because again, when you're breathing slowly, you're working with the what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, the part that calms you down.
Mm.
And your system kind of has to. If you're breathing slowly for a while, your system has to calm you down.
So it lowers your heart rate?
Lowers your heart rate. It sort of, the adrenaline stops.
And we're on a loop, aren't we? We're on a loop.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Our brain can increase our heart rate, but by decreasing our heart rate, we can ease the brain.
Yes.
It's a feedback loop.
You've got a feedback loop because you've got the brain and the heart, stomach, brain, all have neurons, which are like nerve cells, brain cells, if you like. Now, the brain is the big gorilla in the story. It has most of them. But they're in communication all the time. So if you're doing the breathing, that is calming down the heart and the stomach, which detect the stress. And they're sending a calm down signal to the emotional centers of the brain.
Right.
So these things then all work together. And very much with stress, it seems to be a physical thing, really, even though it might be triggered by a thought. It's physical. Anybody, say, who has, say, butterflies in their tummy, you know, that's a physical thing happening in your gut. and it's sending a signal up to your brain to say, what's going on here?
Okay. Mindfulness. It's easy. The description is easy. Breathe in, 7, exhale, 11.
Yeah.
To actually do it in practice, it's very difficult. To actually stay thinking about that breath. I get about 4 or 5 of those, and I find myself drifting off.
Yeah.
So that's less than 2 minutes of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And our default setting is for our minds to drift. And that's why they drift in all sorts of situations where they shouldn't be drifting.
Yes.
It's because that's regarded as the default setting of the nervous, of the brain. And when you, so the key thing in mindfulness is not that you stay in the present moment, it's that you keep coming back to it. And even if you try, let's say you're trying to be aware of your breathing for 1 minute. And you realise sometime during that minute that you've drifted away.
Yeah.
Now, once you've realised that, you're back, actually. You're back in the present.
And then you come back. Yeah.
So it's coming back. And even just doing that for a few minutes, a few times a day, makes you better at it.
Sometimes this, sometimes that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to take that away from the book as well. Will you explain that to me?
This is a sort of a Japanese Zen type of idea that I came across years ago, and I really liked it. It's saying that instead of demanding that everything always be the same, that you always be the same, you accept that sometimes I'm going to be good at what I do, sometimes I'll be bad.
Mm.
Sometimes I'll be a success, sometimes I'll be a failure. Sometimes I'll be funny and sometimes I'll be boring. Sometimes the world will treat me bad and sometimes it'll treat me really rotten.
Right. Yeah.
So, and once you can accept that sometimes this, sometimes that, it lowers an awful lot of the stress. Because
it takes the sting out of things, doesn't it?
It takes the sting out, yeah.
And those two words, are dangerous, always and never.
Oh, yeah.
Because very few things are always and...
There's no such thing as always and never, no. I mean, there's nothing...
Yeah, like if you say to yourself, for example, I'm always boring. No,
No, absolutely not. Or I'm always interesting.
Yes, you're not, absolutely not, yeah. I went for the boring one. That's my default. I'm a pessimist. You went for the positive one, you say.
Yeah, though I'm a pessimist by nature, but I've kind of taught myself to deliberately
move. How did you do that?
Largely by last year, for some reason, I read a thing by a person called Kelly McGonigal, who has written books on this, and she picks one word every year. That she will sort of think about and reflect on.
For a year, one word in a year.
For a year.
Right.
So I thought, I'll try that. So I decided on the word optimism.
Okay.
It just came to me, optimism.
Yeah.
So basically, if I'm doing, I do a journal more or less every day, so I would write about what it means to me and optimism, what is it, and so on.
Yeah.
What are its limitations, what are its good points, etc. And so I just kept doing that for a year, and it did help to sort of switch the default, I think, over to that. And
so you're more optimistic now?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
You talk in the book about a sort of an attitude of gratitude, if you like.
Yeah.
And we hear this over and over again. If at the end of a day that we just take time out to appreciate things that we have in our lives, the positives.
Yeah, I think that the amount of research that shows that gratitude is good for you. Like you could, if you put it end to end, it would circle the planet.
Right.
And that can be gratitude to somebody, to something. If you have a spiritual belief, it might be to a higher power, so to speak. If you don't, it can be gratitude that you've received something that you didn't have to receive. So if it's suppose it's a nice sunny day. Suppose when I go out from here later on today, the sun is shining and the sky is blue. I know perfectly well it won't be, but suppose it is.
Yeah.
The universe didn't have to do that for me. In fact, it wasn't even thinking about me. But I can acknowledge that. I can be grateful that I've got that,
So people who are positive and people who are thankful, those people who sometimes some of us can find a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
That's really good for your mental health.
It's very well. The thankful part is definitely good for your mental health, and it's something that even where people have something like a chronic illness, for example, gratitude, in general, a general attitude opposed to gratitude helps.
Let's talk about illness then, because acceptance of that is a difficult thing, but it's important.
It's very important because until you accept it, you're probably not going to do the things that you ought to be doing to deal with it. So, for example, if you have something like, let's say, people have been hit by something like long COVID, they didn't expect this thing to come along and it's upended their lives. So it's very hard to accept that.
Yeah.
For as long as you don't accept it, you're basically fighting with your body and with yourself. And by accepting, I've got this. Now, what's next is, what do I need to do next? And that's...
Okay, and is acceptance the opposite to denial? Or no, not
it's really. The opposite. Denial would be
aspect of it.
Probably, yes, yeah, and might be the major aspect of it. I sometimes think that indifference is another, where I don't even care enough to accept or not accept. You know?
But I think the important thing that comes through in the book is this ability to move on. And again, we've done serious illnesses, but a loss, if you've lost a loved one, if somebody has died, belonged to you, and you're grieving, and people say they don't want to move on.
Yeah.
You know, they don't, and I don't know if they're saying they don't want to accept that the person's dead, but...
Yeah. I think it's a tricky one, because what I'm saying, accepting is allowing yourself, and you may not, as a person, you may not control how long this takes. There's the period of time during which the grief works its way through and works its way out. And then after another time, after a further time has passed, you may be able to take more part in the things that are around you by accepting the loss, valuing the loss, of course, and the value of what you lost, but not dwelling on it 24/7, and allowing yourself to participate in life outside of that. And an example that has been given is that if you think of grief as a picture that's so big that it stretches from the ceiling down to the wall, when you're looking at that picture close up, it's overwhelming. If you walk away down a very, very, very long corridor, as you look back, the picture seems to be getting smaller and you can pay more attention to the things that are around you. So it's like that with the grief. The thing still happened, and if you go up close, it's still going to be there, as hard as ever.
Yes, and you can revisit it.
Yes, you can, yes.
And there's loads of techniques in the book. There's the breathing, and there's that one you just mentioned. And then there's one where you get a photograph of your younger self.
Yeah, this is one about the importance of accepting yourself, you know, and self-compassion. And so before you might get, or if you don't have one to hand, imagine a photograph of your younger self, it might be a school photograph or something. And you're trying to, looking at that, you're trying to sort of send a sense of goodwill and well-wishing towards that child, even though you know how things worked out, towards that child, even trying to see, maybe feel a sense of affection even. But then you imagine that child sending goodwill and well-wishing to you, even if things didn't work out the way you hoped at that time.
So it's unconditional.
It's unconditional. Yeah, it's unconditional. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like self-compassion has to be unconditional. You have to be a friend to yourself whether you succeed or fail.
We're not good at that.
We're terrible at it.
Particularly, and you allude to it in the book about us Irish not being able to take compliments. How do we get over that? And this is... acceptance of a different, I'm just accepting compliments.
I really think that it's a matter of deciding that you are from now on going to accept a compliment and say thank you very much and just accept it and not be trying to say, oh, it's just a small thing I got in pennies or something, you know. And in fact, so it's a matter of just deciding you're going to just accept compliments and it's fine. After all, the person giving a compliment would rather you accepted it.
Yes, because it gets awkward then, doesn't it, if you don't? Yes.
Yeah. And so I think that...
A lot of the book is based on the Buddhist philosophy.
Yeah.
And a lot of the books that I read now seem to be based on the Buddhist philosophy. Why don't we all just become Buddhists?
Well, in strange ways, we are adopting ideas, I suppose, that are Buddhist ideas. And we are maybe, as we become more philosophical about things, I mean, there is there's the basic Buddhist idea that everything is impermanent. Well, I think we accept that now anyway.
And that things are a struggle, right? Life is a struggle.
It's a struggle. Things are always a bit dissatisfying.
Yeah.
And the thing is, instead of getting completely caught into that fact and getting totally upset about it, trying to live your life in the best way you can, with as much peace as you can, even though it's dissatisfying and things are dissatisfying because everything is impermanent.
Yes,
the phone that you got today, and it's a fantastic phone, next week would be out of date, you know. So you start feeling a little niggle of dissatisfaction.
So you accept that that life is dissatisfying, which is probably a better approach and a better prism to view life than this sort of happiness thing, aspiring to happiness that we've been sold by Hollywood movies, the happy ending. Because that's far from real.
No, that's far from real. And the thing of trying to be happy all, of thinking I can be happy all the time if I do such and such, it's not true. One philosopher, whose name I forget, described this as cruel optimism.
Right.
You know, where you're optimistic about something that just isn't going to happen.
Yes.
And so with accepting dissatisfaction, you are then saying, okay, first of all, dissatisfaction is a better word to use than it's a disaster, it's a catastrophe. But secondly, you're saying, okay, it's dissatisfaction, but I can live a satisfying life even though things are dissatisfying, because it's a pretty chaotic universe. It's probably not really chaotic, but from our point of view, it's chaotic. And it looks pretty random. So how do I, this is where mindfulness, I suppose, comes in. How do I appreciate what I have that's good? And when things are bad, just recognizing it will change back to being good again. Now that will change again back to being dissatisfying.
Sometimes this, sometimes that.
Yeah, sometimes this, sometimes that. And appreciate.
Yeah.
Appreciate and enjoy it when it's good.
Yeah. You could encapsulate, you could write this book in a sentence, but I love the fact that reading through the book, you realise that acceptance, when it works and when we use it, goes to every part of our life, everything.
Yeah.
Loss, self-compassion, anxiety, everything. It's all there.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't ask the Manchester United fans now to accept today. Other than that, all life is there.
Right. Who do you support?
I support Arsenal if I support anybody. Right, really. I'm not a passionate
Somebody fan. Pointed out that, yes, 7 is the number. United are 7 points ahead of Liverpool. That's Finney and Mayo, obviously, a Manchester United fan. Okay, Acceptance is the name of the book. Pádraig O'Moran, thank you very much. It's in bookshops now. Create change and move forward. Thanks,
thank you very much, Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grimaga Court, thank you very much. 51551 RadioRT.ie. Pádraig's Daily Bell on his website is only fantastic and arrives every day from 7:30 a.m. Highly recommend it. Says Jimmy, and there's bits of audio there as well on Pádraig's website. I'm listening with interest, having just completed my master's in TUS on the psychotherapy of relationship mentoring under Dr. Tony Humphreys. Acceptance for me is about love of self. Reading so many books, Edith Eger speaks so eloquently about it in her book, The Choice. When you give people time, you give people love. And it's the same, it's about giving oneself time in no matter what modality one chooses. I will await patiently for an eternity for you to become present, your precious self. Warm regards, and that's Maria. Never say always and always avoid saying never. Aha! Very good. You've twisted my words. Never say always and always avoid saying never. Yeah. Okay, we've two quizzers standing by for our Whodunit quiz. Yes. And there's a prize awaiting one of them. And it's 2-night stay for 2 people in the River Lee, part of the family-run Irish luxury hotel group, the Doyle Collection. Spring is in the air and it's time to discover all that Cork City has to offer. So you 2 people and dinner inclusive, and they have a promotion at the moment that if you use the promo code CHAMPAGNE, you get a free bottle of champagne. Beautiful riverside location, luxurious bedrooms and dining and drinks options to suit every taste. And doylecollection.com, doylecollection.com. Hello, Fionnuala.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
You're in Dunloe.
I am.
Silent G.
Silent G, but the G is there.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're all about pronunciations today. How are things in Donegal?
Things are grand in Donegal. A little bit cold. You wouldn't want to be going out without the jacket today.
Yes, yeah.
And the forecast ain't great either.
No, we're in for a little bit of a short cold spell. And
a short spell, hopefully.
Yeah, they're predicting snow on high ground. Fionnuala.
Yes, they are. And it's like winter out here, except that the daffodils are in bloom.
Yes. Oh, that it's so encouraging, isn't it, to see them?
Oh, well, when I see spring, you know, I see the yellow flowers coming up, you know, it's the colour of new life and yes. it's spring and it's, and it puts a pep in your step.
Yeah. I was out running this morning and a woman who I meet every day and we say hello to each other, and she was running around with a bunch of daffodils in her hand. I don't know if she should have picked them or not, but she it just brought a smile to my face.
But it made you smile, didn't it?
It made me smile.
Yeah.
You are happy today with the result, the 7-0 thingamajig?
Oh, very happy. Nearly as happy as I was. When was it? 2005, 6? Remember Istanbul?
Oh, yes, yes.
When they came back from 3-0 down at halftime.
Yeah. Like people had left the television, thought they were gone, they came back. Yeah.
My nephew was in the pub and he was so disgusted at half time that he headed home, and by the time he got home, Liverpool had scored two goals and he missed them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So this is an important question now. The toppings on chips. So ketchup was at the top, then vinegar and curry sauce has overtaken gravy. How were you on chips and curry or gravy?
On most of those toppings, curry chips, no.
No.
Gravy, no. It only makes your chips soggy.
Yes, yeah. You need them crispy, don't you?
Oh, I like them nice and crispy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that
one.
And
remember back in the good old days, you know, when you'd have your chip pan and there was always those little crispy bits at the bottom of the pan.
Yes.
That was the best bits.
They're my wife's favourites. She always done the, you know, you'd get a plate of chips and fish and chips or whatever, and immediately she's looking for the little hard bits.
The wee crispy bits.
Yeah, the wee crispy ones, right. You're up against Tony Lundy in Blanchardstown. How are you doing, Tony?
Not bad, Brian. Yourself?
Good. Have you any strong feelings about curry, gravy, chips, all that sort of thing?
I'm not a big curry fan now, to be honest. But I'd eat plenty of chips now, so I would. And there's usually the salt and vinegar with the fish.
Yes.
That's been my specialty on that
day. Yeah. You were cycling over the weekend?
I was. I was out for a bit of a cycle yesterday, all right. I was out from here to Hoth and back. That's a routine sort of have that I'm back. I had an injury there before Christmas and I just got back into it since the end of January now.
Right. That's my first trip now. How long is that trip?
Well, the route I took was over 80 kilometres. It's 32 from my house to the tip, the Hill of Hoth. But I didn't do the Hill of Hoth yesterday. I turned at Sutton.
Right.
And then when I got back towards St. Margaret's and that, I'd done an extra bit of a lap out around Dunbine and on that crack.
How long did that take you now, Tony?
I had a coffee break and a few breaks along. So I left at a short yesterday to talk and I was home again at 1:30, 1:15.
Right, yeah. No, I've been asked to do a charity cycle. I'm wondering if I'm up for it. There's a couple of...
No bother to you at all.
No, right. There's a couple of 100k cycles and I think the last...
Yeah, that'd be my limit now. I wouldn't go any further than that now.
And do you mind me asking what age you are?
I have a bus pass. If I failed, if I had to stop, I could come home on the bus.
Looking well. Great.
That's all I'll tell you now. I won't tell you anymore.
Right, okay. Well, that's enough. That's enough detail. Yeah. Right, okay. So it's Fionnuala versus Tony. Three questions
each.
Good luck,
Tony.
Good luck, Fionnuala. All the best.
Thank you.
So I give you the category and then you decide if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most at the end is the winner. However, if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Fionnuala, the first category is music. Do you want a clue or not?
Oh, I'll risk going without.
Okay, so for 2 points, wait till the clip is over. Who is this?
I'm your father, a dancer for
moon. Oh, that's Tina Turner.
You want me to do. I'm your father.
It is Tina Turner, yes. We'll play it out there. She sounds good.
Any old music will do.
Yeah, a great song, Private Dancer. It is Tina Turner.
Yeah,
you got 2 points.
Fabulous.
Absolutely great. Okay, now, Tony, music. Do you want a clue or not?
Well, I'll have to go without a clue now.
Without a clue? Okay.
Without a clue, yeah.
Yeah, you can let them finish if you like. So, who is this for 2 points?
You're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain.
Who's that?
The Neil Sedaka.
No. Carly Simon. Carly Tyson. Simon.
No panic yet,
Tony. No panic yet. So, Fionnuala, you're on two. Tony, yet to score. Second category is history. American history. Okay. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll risk going without.
Okay. So, for 2 points, who is this?
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate.
Who's that?
I think it's Ronald Reagan.
It is Ronald Reagan. Well done, yes. 2 points. Now, Tony, you're under pressure.
Yeah, indeed. Go on ahead.
You're under pressure because Fionnuala's on four.
Yeah, I have no chance.
And you can only... No, you can. You still have a chance because if you get four and Fionnuala gets nothing from her final, then we're into a tie-break question. Yeah. But you do have to go without a clue, I think.
Yeah, I have to go, yeah.
Okay, so it's American history. For 2 points, Tony, an important one for you. Good luck. Who is this?
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
Who's that?
Is it Martin Luther King?
It is Martin Luther King. You're on the scoreboard. It's not over yet. It ain't over yet. Okay, Tony on two. Fionnuala, you're on four. If you get anything from this one, Fionnuala, Tony can't catch her. However, if you get nothing from it, and he gets his final one right without a clue, we're into a tie-break situation. So, what do you want to do?
Yeah, I think I can risk taking a clue this time.
Yes, it's sport. It's sport. Okay. Here's your clue. Listen carefully. He's not a good pundit. He's a great pundit. Okay, for 1 point, to win today's quiz, who is this?
Bill, we're in the business of judging performances. You know, if that was a concert, you'd boo. And that was a game of football at the highest level. Liverpool were terrible. Sissoko giving the ball away. Gerrard, right? Found out tonight. Nothing player.
Who's that?
That sounds like Eamon Dunphy.
It is Eamon Dunphy for a point. It is, yes. You're on five, Tony. You can't catch her.
Can't catch her, no.
No.
I knew all of them three, but that's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. Look at the draw. Yeah. Listen, we're going to send you out Ray Darcy show. Keep cup, Tony.
No bother. Cheers.
Yeah, lovely talking to you. Keep up the cycling.
No,
mind yourself.
Thank you.
Good luck. See you, Tony. Bye. Fionnuala.
Yes, I'm heading to Cork.
Yes, you're going to Cork. The River Lee Hotel. You can go to doylecollection.com/Cork to find out what's in store for you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to it.
Yeah, great talking to you. Thanks, Fionnuala.
Well done. Thank you so much.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us in studio. We'll be chatting to him in a moment. But first, this. Lizzo! And she's in Dublin's Three Arena this day week. Conor Pope, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Ray.
You are a Manchester United supporter.
I am, very proud of it. Have been since the mid-1970s.
We were talking to Stephanie Roach earlier on. I only got the 3 goals and then she stopped me. Do you want to hear the other?
Do you know what? Yeah, what can I say?
No, I won't. That's not fair.
But do you know what? The thing is about football, right? Like, it's a roller coaster, Ray.
Yeah.
Because this time last week, we were all talking about United having won the Carabao Cup. And then on the previous Thursday, they'd beaten Barcelona and they were into the last 16 of the Europa League. And this has happened. And it's a freak. It's a freak. And I think a lot of your listeners are probably still pointing out that while Liverpool won by 7 goals, they're still 7 points adrift.
That was pointed out, yes.
And if you were to say, okay, well, would you have imagined at the start of the season that United would be 7 points clear of Liverpool and kind of almost locked into a Champions League place, whereas Liverpool would be struggling with the likes of Newcastle and Spurs for that fourth place? I think most people would have said no. So listen, let them enjoy it.
Okay.
Right?
Can I ask you, how was your Sunday evening?
Pretty miserable.
Why do you let it affect you like that?
Because football is one of those fabulous things in that it's so unpredictable and has that emotional roller coaster. Yeah. And I mean, I remember one of my ambitions is to get my kids to really appreciate football. So we watched the World Cup final together, and I swear to God, it was the first time they'd watched a full. I was going to say 90 minutes, but obviously it was a lot longer than that. A full game of football, and it had everything. And that kind of emotional roller coaster, you'd not get it in a book, you'd not get it in a film, you'd not get it in a TV series. And it's one of the really interesting things about Welcome to Wrexham. I don't know if you've watched Welcome to Wrexham.
It's the Netflix episode about
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney have bought Wrexham. And the really nice thing about it is they can't script it. So, like, if it was a Hollywood production, at the end of the first series, Wrexham would have won promotion to the league and blah, blah. All of these, spoiler alert, they didn't. Sorry, it's been on long enough. But you can't script football. No. And there is no way in a million years you could have scripted Liverpool knocking in 6 goals in the second half yesterday. And as I say, they'll enjoy it and they'll be crowing about it, because it's the first time they've scored 7 goals against United since United were Newton Heath in 1895. And it's the worst result United have had since 1930. And
31.
31. Yes. And all of these stats against Wolves in Molineux Park. Yeah, no, and it almost becomes this masochistic thing. I started then reading all the newspaper reports about it in the British media.
Why would you do that to yourself?
It's like the kind of the masochistic, the flagellation with the reeds or whatever it might be.
While you were doing that, I was reading your article in the Irish Times today about cash, and is cash on the way out? And we've talked about this numerous occasions. And the last time you looked at this in depth was 3 years ago. Of course, the world has changed since then, particularly for online shopping, contactless and all that. So where are we at now?
Well, it's inexorable, and the decline of cash is happening, but maybe it's not such a desirable thing. And I think it really depends on who you are and how you are fixed in society. And like, it would be very easy for me to be blasé and say, sure, jeepers, I don't use cash. I can't remember the last time I took money out of an ATM. And I think a lot of people are like that, because I carried out a Twitter poll. Now, it's very unscientific, a Twitter poll.
And it's very Irish Times.
It's people who are online and in that social media so like a majority of people who responded, and there was more than 3,500 votes, but the majority of people said they only very, very rarely used cash. But that still leaves aside an awful a cohort, not so much of older people, but of people who are on the margins in terms of financial security. And I think an awful lot of people who are on lower incomes rely more on cash, because there's a certainty to that. So it is important that that is protected. And the European Central Bank, in a report that it released late last year, and the Irish Central Bank kind of followed that, they have all mandated that cash needs to be protected in so far as it is possible to protect it. Now, that's not to say that cash is going to be for everybody at all times, because the convenience of tapping and going and contactless in your phone and all the rest of that stuff, like, you can't replace that. The toothpaste is out of the tube. But you still need to protect cash, and it still needs to be something that's backed by states, and that's important to do. But speaking personally, like, I don't even need my wallet anymore, because everything is on my phone. Yeah. And Lord knows what happens when you lose your phone, because that does happen.
Or it dies when you're at the cash register.
That's actually happened to me, and I've had to run out to the car, plug my phone in, charge it, and you have no idea how slow your phone is to charge when you've got the people in Tesco waiting.
Watch kettle. Yeah.
But you know, it. And the funny thing is, as I noted in the piece in the Irish Times, that the last piece and the piece I wrote, it was literally the last Monday before COVID really kicked off. At the very start of March 2020.
So that COVID has accelerated things.
Big time, because a lot of people don't like using ATM machines, because the pads can be filthy. They don't like handling money, because money has been in other people's hands. And it's kind of pushing people further and further away. Okay. But to be fair, like, the people who are the big winners in this aren't so much the consumers, but the banks. Because the banks don't want us to use money at all, because money is expensive for them. And I'm always reluctant to follow the lead of the banks.
The banks don't want us to use banks. The traditional bank.
When AIB tried to move 70 of its banks to cashless banks, it's like, having a laugh.
Yeah. Okay, right. This came into PriceWatch at RTE.ie. A total amount of €600 was taken from my bank account by Vodafone. I only realised this when I received statements from my bank a month ago that this has been going on since August 2021. Vodafone have been taking two payments. These were not consistent each month. Endless calls logged, no one giving me a definitive answer. Zero communication between agents, meaning I had to repeat myself on every call. The most recent update I've received is that they spotted an active account under the same name as me, but with a completely different address. It's now with the privacy team.
Yeah, this actually story is slightly more complicated than it might seem. But on one level, it's very similar to all the stories that we've dealt with about telecommunications companies over many, many years. And basically, the problem is the same every time. It's like you have an issue, you try and make contact with the company, you can't make contact with the company, so then you try again and again and again. And every time you make contact with the company, you're kind of starting from scratch. And I think that's a problem that needs to be addressed. But when I intervened on behalf of this listener and I contacted Vodafone, the nature of the problem actually very quickly became clear. And it turns out that it's actually the root of the problem was our listener. And it was a genuine mistake that it happened. But what had happened was our listener was setting up an account for her mother, and she gave her own financial details, her own bank details, to open the account for her mother. Okay. And then so Vodafone, so there was two separate accounts belonging to Vodafone in her name, one for her mother and one for herself.
Right.
And her mother then contacted Vodafone after the initial account had been opened to say, well, listen, I want to take over the payments. And that never happened. So the initial request from her mother to take over the payments didn't happen. She'd inadvertently been paying for her mother's telephone account for 6 months and had, or for longer than that, and hadn't realised it. And that was at the root cause of the payments.
Uh-huh.
So the thing is, Vodafone were able to identify that extremely quickly when we intervened. And they were able to say, oh, this is what's going on. And they were able to say, not only did they resolve it, they said, well, listen, as a gesture of goodwill, we're going to give you back the money, the 600 quid that has been taken from your account, even though the money was rightfully owed to Vodafone because it was her mother's. But they did it as a gesture of goodwill to compensate for the level of confusion that happened between this particular listener.
And it is that thing that you say, that, and she mentions it here, that you get somebody on the phone, you do the whole story, and they don't escalate it or they park it. And then you have to ring back, you get somebody else.
And you're starting from scratch. And what I don't understand is why companies don't have a log of the previous interactions.
Why don't they?
And all companies could have that. So basically, it'd be like opening a Microsoft Word document that had all of the information that I have previously imparted to you. And then the person, the call centre operative, could look at that and go, let me just read your notes.
Yes.
Almost like a doctor's file. So that, imagine we had a medical system whereby every time you went into the hospital or every time you went to your GP, they'd be like, now, Ray Darcy, now, how old are you? And you'd have to start from scratch and give them all your details.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't accept that with the medical system. And we shouldn't really be accepting it with telecommunications. But to be fair to Vodafone,
On this occasion,
the listener made the transaction.
Okay.
The listener then forgot that had been at the root cause of it. So the mother benefited from the bill being paid by her daughter for a period of time. And then when Vodafone found out about it, they reimbursed them the cash.
There's more and more of that, I would imagine, because the age profile of this country, that people will be paying for their parents. How does that work? So you know, can you pay out of your account and that's all okay?
Well, do you know what? It works in exactly the same way as a parent paying for a child's account.
Okay, yes,
you know,
in the
same way that, you know, there will be scenarios whereby, particularly for the 30 or 40% of older people who are going to be relying on the state pension, they're not going to find that particularly easy. And their parents or their children might be in a position where they're saying, listen, I'll cover the cost of your bills for X, Y and Z. And we are probably going to see that even more as the cost of living crisis continues, because people are really struggling. We saw last week all the sky high electricity bills that were coming in and landing, and people being asked to pay more than €1,000 or whatever it might be. And those bills were always coming. We knew they were coming. We talked about them for months. But when you actually open the envelope and you see just how high the bill is, and there is going to be scenarios where
I could set up a direct debit on my account to pay my mother's
100%. It works in exactly the same way as it would.
Okay.
It was going the other way.
Tradesmen love cash. Restaurant staff prefer tips in cash. Can't see cash fully disappearing ever, says Mary.
Well, that's a very good point. But actually, the changes in legislation mean that tips, when they're paid via electronic means, under legislation, they have to go to the staff as well, or that policy has to be clearly outlined. But obviously, there are people who still prefer cash, and you know.
But the real losers here are people who are forced to beg, people, you know, because
100%. Listen,
people don't carry cash anymore.
Yeah, no, 100%. If you like, if you see somebody who's on, who's in difficult circumstances, yeah, and you know, you're there, it might be freezing cold, and you just want to give them a euro or 2 euros or whatever it might be, and if you don't have a bean in change, I mean, like, it's not like somebody who is in a difficult financial situation.
So what
situation.
Do you? I'm just wondering, what's the solution to that?
Well, do you know what? If you, like, there is a solution to it, and you know, the solution would be for you or I or for people who want
to carry cash
for that specific purpose.
Yes,
and actually, as you say it, that's the kind of thing that I believe I should be doing, not lecturing anybody else. But oftentimes, like more often than I, like you're walking past somebody and you'd like to give them something.
And you say you have no cash and you think that's okay.
But I'm absolving myself of responsibility for helping that person because I'm not carrying cash. What I maybe should be doing is carrying cash explicitly to help that person in the future.
Let's put that message out there. It's not good enough.
No.
Because I really want to help.
And it's an excuse that I use. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't have any money.
Right, okay. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Conor's help on any consumer issues. Conor will be back next Monday. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.